The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Dr. Brian Halverson is one of the UK's leading holistic dentists. He is the author of Great Teeth for Life and lectures widely to the public and to health practitioners. Brian is passionate about providing preventative information to guide us through all the stages of our lifetime. To find out more about Brian, go to www.brianhalverson.com. And now here is Dr. Brian Halverson.
I can see clearly
now. Okay,
Brian
here, integrated dentist for UK Health Radio. This show, I'm going to be interviewing a legend in what I would call nutrition and all the advances that have been made. In fact, I'd almost call Patrick Holford the father of nutrition when it comes to the UK. Patrick is a best-selling author, has done many shows on TV and radio, and to me is really one of the celebrities of nutrition and health advice. Patrick, can you tell us when it first started, you know, when you got your inspiration to take this as your life purpose?
Well, I kind of know exactly where, but there was a precursor to this. I was studying psychology at university, in the University of York, which happened to specialize in schizophrenia. And the reason I was studying psychology is I'd had some kind of interesting mystical experiences as a teenager, and I knew there was more to life. I thought studying psychology would give me the answers. It didn't. It's a very new science. However, I got very much involved in the brain and neurochemistry. And I got interested in two things. One was intelligence and the other was schizophrenia. Schizophrenia was the worst suffering. I thought that was really worth looking at. And intelligence, well, that's really what we're lacking in the world and need more of. So they were my areas of interest. I was probably heading towards being a psychotherapist, but it didn't work for schizophrenia. And the drugs didn't work. They were chemical straitjackets. And then I came across two things. One was an extraordinary piece of research, which turned out to be the first ever double-blind controlled trial in the history of psychiatry, which had given very large amounts of B vitamins and versus placebo, and the results were extraordinary. And I also was given a book called Mental and Elemental Nutrients by a man called Dr. Carl Pfeiffer. The person doing the research on schizophrenia was Dr. Abram Hoffer. So I went to Canada where he was research director, and I asked him, how many people have you treated with this sort of mega vitamin approach? And he said, over 3,000. And I said, what is your success rate? And he said, 85% cure. Now, I nearly fell off my chair because I've never seen a cured schizophrenic. And I said, well, that's a very bold claim. What do you mean by cure? And he said, free of symptoms, able to socialize with family and friends and paying income tax. And that I had never seen, a schizophrenic paying income tax. So I asked to see some of his former patients, and they were as sane as you or I. And then I said to him, I have only one more question for you, Dr. Hoffer. Can I become your student? So that's kind of how I got into this. But shortly thereafter, I remember driving down a hill near Christmas Common in Oxfordshire. And having this radical thought, I mean, this is in the late 70s, early 80s, and that is, could it be that all this disease, all this heart disease and diabetes and cancer and mental illness, could it possibly be that this is to do with suboptimum nutrition? And of course, in those days, I mean, these were the days when the idea that cancer had anything to do with nutrition would have been a really outrageous suggestion, let alone intelligence and mental health. And on the back of that concept, I took a rather bold move. I'm now about 22 years old, and I decided to set up an institute for optimum nutrition to study this. And out of that institute, we created a new profession, which is the profession of nutritional therapy. And that's kind of how it all happened.
Yes, I mean, this is, I think, the Institute of Optimum Nutrition, I think at the time is where we, I suppose, crossed paths, because I think either yourself or one of your senior executives did ask me to actually lecture there on the basis of nutrition and relation to dentistry. But what I was totally impressed with was the high level of science and research that the students were getting, in a sense that I felt it was at equivalent of certainly a degree course. And I know that initially that you were fighting to get that recognition. But of course, as you say, nutrition as such was still really regarded as a slight bit of, well, yes, it's interesting, but it's more for the sackcloth and ashes and the hippie brigade, which obviously you made a big stand to turn it into a genuine speciality in science.
Well, yes, and actually it's slightly a tragedy, because in all these years, and it's now been 40 years, and the science has got phenomenally good. I mean, we are so on the money in relation to all these big diseases. However, there's also a sort of dark side. I mean, only a few weeks ago, after 3 years' work, and this is actually for the third time, the Institute for Optimum Nutrition was just about to launch with the Open University a degree course. And at the very final hour, and you can imagine how much, you know, hard work had gone into establishing all this, they pulled out. And at this point in time, they said it's got nothing to do with your academic, you know, standards, which are excellent. It's for some internal reason. And I'm afraid to say that just as we push forward understanding the role of nutrition in disease and all the rest of it, still, we have pharmaceutical interests making sure that none of this stuff gets into mainstream education, mainstream medicine. I mean, only 2 weeks ago, doctors were actually prohibited now from prescribing omega-3 fish oils to people with heart disease. In order to save £6 million, however, the EU food group have estimated that if everyone over 50 took 1 gram of fish oil a day, that would actually save 1.65 billion across the EU every single year. So on the one hand, we've got this tremendous, you know, positive advancement. And on the other hand, we've still got these awful breaks, you know.
Yes, I mean, I have spent a lot of time with my medical colleagues. And what actually fascinated me, or horrified me, I should say, really, was that if you take a 5 to 7 year course in undergraduate medicine, most of the students have less than 1 week in any form of nutritional biochemistry. Another nutritionist said to me that one of her friend's daughters, who had just qualified, they were talking about very simplistic biochemical essential mechanisms of how the body works. In this case, it was the Krebs cycle. and the doctor had no clue about what they were talking about.
Well, it's actually worse than that, because one of the guys that I work with, who used to be the vice dean of Oxford Medical School and now emeritus professor of pharmacology, he's Professor David Smith, one of the world's experts on Alzheimer's, which, by the way, is preventable. He was sitting in on the diabetes lecture at Oxford University Medical School. And at the end of the lecture, he said there were 7 minutes on nutrition. And the lecturer said to the students, by the way, this is the only nutrition you're going to get. 7 minutes. But now listen to this. Last 2 weeks ago, the entire issue of the British Medical Journal, all 68 pages, was on nothing but nutrition. And the reason that that came about is a big problem. The health insurance, life insurance industry is worth more than $1 trillion. And you may or may not know, but about 2-3 years ago, something rather dramatic happened. And that was that instead of our life expectancy increasing, it started to decrease. In other words, people are living less time rather than time. And what that means is if someone's paying a life insurance, you know, policy or a health insurance policy, they're going to be paying for a shorter period of time. There'll be less money in the pot and there'll be more payouts. And this is fairly tragic for the insurance industry. And behind the health and life insurers is they actually cover their bets with the insurer's insurer, which is called Swiss Re. And Swiss Re worked out that they have got to stop people dying early. And they researched and they found out that what would really make a difference is a low-carb, a low-glycemic load approach, not the big error that's been running, which is this sort of low-fat, you know, low-calorie, low-fat, high-carb, which is completely wrong. So they actually funded the British Medical Journal to run a conference and to push for doctors to be educated. And this stupid sort of fat phobia stage, you know, that we've been in to turn around. Now, I started writing about how it wasn't fat. You know, eating eggs doesn't raise your cholesterol. It's not fat that makes you fat. It's too much sugar and refined carbs. I wrote my first book on it, I think, in 1987. So it's taken, you know, some 30 years to get to the point. Well, actually, it's 40 years, isn't it? To get to the point where there's this awakening. And it's happening because the financial shit is hitting the fan. It's just untenable to continue in this way. And as much as I'm a fan of the NHS and the brilliant, you know, service you get offered when there's a tragedy or an emergency or whatever it happens to be, the fact of the matter is the NHS is the fastest growing failing business in Britain, and it will continue to do so until it puts the real causes of disease at the top of the agenda, not sort of sidelined. And, you know, the way to cut the cost of the NHS is simply to have less people with preventable diseases, less people with diabetes and cancer and heart disease, you know, and that's really what has to happen. We're not quite there yet. I mean, the Cancer Research Campaign, who fundamentally resisted the fact that sugar is the major driver of cancer, have finally started their campaign saying that obesity is the second largest cause of cancer. But meanwhile, they want you to go and bake cupcakes.
Yeah. Now, I totally agree in the sense that this is the tragedy, that prevention should be the absolute keystone or cornerstone to our healthcare. And I actually often now divide what I will call the National Health Service should be renamed the National Disease Service, because all it really is doing is dealing with disease reactively, and the service cannot sustain it.
Yes, the National Health Service, as much as I love it for all its wonderful free care and emergency help when you know, when things go wrong, it is, in honesty, the fastest growing failing business in Britain. and it's going to continue to cost more and more money until we actually put the true causes of disease at the very top of the agenda. The only way to save the NHS money is to have less people with diabetes and Alzheimer's and cancer and heart disease and all these preventable diseases. It's completely doable. I wrote a blog about how to save the NHS £6 billion. There are such simple ways with virtually no investment by which we could save large sums of money. But of course, what's really lacking is not money, it's intelligence.
Yes, I mean, my last show was called SONG, which was standing for Save Our Next Generation. And it was really looking at providing preventative care literally at school level, at preconceptual level, and right the way through pregnancy. When you look at the fantastic numbers of increase of autism and all the associated deep birth defects, which we know are preventable. Now, the reason I'm saying that is that I totally agree with what you're saying, because this should be spread throughout the whole of the health system. But to me, the only way that this can be delivered is by education, because you can tell somebody, don't smoke, don't drink, but unless you provide high quality, evidence-based research, which I'll get to in a second, but basically you have to persuade people to change their lifestyle habits. And it appears that the present system, it's the same in dentistry. You know, often we've been told, well, you know, you can tell people not to have sugars, you can tell people, but, you know, you're talking on deaf ears. Well, the only reason being is the delivery system is so ineffective. So I totally agree with what you're saying. And I think the figure of 6 billion is, in fact, microscopic, what you could save by providing effective, unified throughout the health service systems, some form of continual education. Whereas the so-called people who, what I'll call, have got vested interests in not wanting these messages to get out there, are virtually saying, well, you know, it's not worth it, you know, we're wasting money. They even start calling it the nanny state. You know, so I totally agree with what you're saying in terms of that we're looking at preventable diseases, that somehow is the educational messages to get out there to the public to change things via, as you say, through practitioners, through our first line services, just still is very, very, what should we say, immature.
Well, yes. And I mean, to sort of make it real, we've got whatever it is, 700 people diagnosed with diabetes every week in the UK. And if instead of prescribing drugs, the diabetic was prescribed a half-day workshop run by one of our nutritional therapists who could show them exactly how to reverse diabetes, show them what foods to buy, how to prepare them, share other diabetics who no longer have diabetes. I mean, literally in a matter of, you know, 3-4 hours, a diabetic can be taught how to completely reverse their disease. But on the other hand, do you know about the terrible quaff disaster? It's very embarrassing. It's a real scandal. Do you know about this?
No, Patrick. Please tell me.
Well, basically, back in the days of Tony Blair, he wanted to, you know, pay doctors more money, but motivate them to do the right thing. So a system was set up called QOF. Which was a sort of virtual model that said if we can drive cholesterol down and if we can drive blood pressure down, you know, we would be looking at 30,000 less people dying a year, which would save the NHS a lot of money. So basically a commission system was set up. And probably around 20% of a GP's salary is effectively quaff-based commission. And probably half of that, about 10 grand a year for most GPs, is actually the commission they get from prescribing drugs like statins for lowering cholesterol and blood pressure medication. Anyway, the 15-year period is up. All the data has been collected and analyzed by the British Medical Journal and the Lancet Medical Journal. And what they have reported is that not one of the criteria that the model was based on has happened. I mean, there's no less deaths. It's been a total failure, except it's cost us, the British taxpayer, £30 billion, approximately half of which is the extra drugs prescribed, paid for by the NHS, and the other half are the commissions paid to doctors by the NHS. So, you know, and this is, you have to think that the pharmaceutical industry have absolutely done an amazing coup here. They've got doctors pay commission, not by themselves, but actually by the National Health Service to prescribe their drugs. I mean, it is quite ridiculous. But on the subject of education, of course, you know, we need to be getting into schools. But there is so much misinformation and misunderstanding. I remember the wonderful Professor Michael Crawford, who now does fantastic research on infants at the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital. And he wrote in the Sunday Times in, I think, November 1972, that we are heading for an idiocracy. And in fact, you may have seen that IQs have dropped by 7 points since the 1970s. And brain size also has shrunk to some extent. And one of the reasons for this is that we are actually designed to need a lot of omega-3 fats and also minerals like selenium and zinc and iodine, things that basically are in marine food, because the evolutionists are now telling us that the point at which we got this jump in intelligence relates to our ancestors basically living by the water, water's edge, wetlands, swamplands, along the coast, and having a very high marine food diet. And that's why I'm so upset about this sort of banning of doctors to prescribe omega-3, because we really, really need it. But at the same time, and I can understand this totally, because I used to be one myself, this tremendous movement among young people towards veganism, which is really driven by the appalling practices, animal practices, the fake meat and foods that were being delivered. So you can understand why people have rebelled. But it's potentially very dangerous. I mean, we have 10 deaths already from vegan infants, where a mother has usually not breastfed and decided that their child should be vegan. And if you don't supply enough omega-3, and by the way, you cannot get enough from the wonderful chia seeds that I eat every day or flax seeds, they just do not convert into the kind of omega-3 called DHA, which is very rich in oily fish. And the DHA level in the umbilical cord of a newborn baby predicts its speed of thinking at the age of 8. So you have to have these complex fats to build a baby's brain. It's just essential. So, you know, the move towards veganism is, on the one hand, fantastic, because people are, you know, moving hopefully away from junk food, although there's plenty of junk vegan food as well, towards a more whole food diet and more fruit and more vegetables and more nuts and more seeds, all of which is great. But unfortunately, with this total lack of education, a lot of vegans just do not realize that they may not be getting enough of certain nutrients, one of which also is vitamin B12, which is only found in the animal kingdom.
No, I totally agree. In fact, my son and daughter-in-law are vegan, and but they have done an awful lot of research. But they have done that because they're the type of people they are. But I think when you're looking at now, possibly up to, I think it's now 2 million people in this country that are vegan.
More, it's over 3 million now.
3 million, gosh, it's going up a great, and as you rightly say, there are very, very valid reasons why, but again, the education needs to be there, or you know, we need to, as you quite rightly say, that if you can't get these things from your diet, because we, as we know, even if you're looking at whole foods, the often the nutrient yield is not great. And also, most people have got some form of dysbiosis, so that the absorption rates aren't great. So for them to get into their bodies the essential nutrients, trace elements and what have you. So would you agree with me that often we have to promote supplementation?
Well, I actually got told off by the chief dietitian from the Vegan Society because I wrote an article and thoroughly researched it, which said that the only the only bioavailable source of B12 in the vegetable kingdom is there's a little in shiitake mushrooms and there's a little in lava seaweed, which is what nori seaweed is made out of. And she told me off saying it's just not reliable enough. And what you need to be telling vegans is they have to, either eat B12 fortified foods, basically supplement B12. And the interesting thing about B12 is that if you look at and by the way, I want to say here that there have been there's a lovely study running. It's called the Avon Longitudinal Study. So it's down in the Avon, Bristol area. And they've been tracking thousands of people and looking at groups of vegans and all the rest of it. And there's two things they found, which has been also shown by other research groups. One is that overall, vegan children have poorer cognition, so it's affecting intelligence. And also that this is a recent study out a couple of months ago, that vegan mothers, when pregnant, have much higher incidence of anxiety. They too may not be getting enough of the omega fats and the B12. Now, the interesting thing about B12, and not many people know this, and it's, again, it's brilliant and also a tragedy, is that the two biggest drivers of Alzheimer's, to give you an example, the National Institute of Health in the US, which is the group, have attributed 22% of the risk of developing Alzheimer's to a lack of seafood and omega-3, and 22% to a lack of B vitamins and a raised homocysteine level. Now, I need to explain what's going on here. Basically, when people get older, their ability to absorb B12, which is only in animal products, unless you supplement it, you can supplement vegetarian B12, the ability to absorb B12 becomes much less because people are producing less stomach acid. And you need stomach secretions to absorb B12. And to put it into context, one study in the UK found that 2 in 5 people over 60 had insufficient B12 in their blood to stop their brains shrinking at an accelerated rate. A study 1 month ago in Ireland found that 1 in 8 people over 50 have insufficient B12. And without B12, you can't do something called methylation. And the indicator of whether or not you're good at this is your homocysteine level. It's a blood test. It should be routinely run. It's more important than cholesterol. And my lovely professor, David Smith at Oxford University, he did a study where he took several hundred people with pre-dementia, pre-Alzheimer's, and he gave them, and they had raised homocysteine because just about everyone does over 70. He gave them high-dose B vitamins, like 500 micrograms of B12, the RDA, which stands for the Ridiculous Dietary Arbitrary, 2 micrograms. So, more than 250 times the RDA. And by the way, you could never eat this, but when you don't absorb well, you have to supplement a much higher dose to get a little more in. And also folic acid and B6, and versus placebo. And he got 9 times less shrinkage in 1 year in the Alzheimer's-related areas of the brain, and virtually no further memory loss. But then he looked at the group of people again. They'd taken blood samples at the beginning. He didn't give omega-3, but he looked at their omega-3 status in their blood, split them into 3 groups, the third with the lowest, the middle, and the third with the highest, and he found that the B vitamins didn't actually work in the people with insufficient omega-3, but in the people with in the third highest omega-3, given the B vitamins, there was no further memory loss. It's extraordinary. And the total reduction in the total brain shrinkage, not the Alzheimer's area, was 73% less shrinkage. Now, the best drug to date has produced 2% less brain shrinkage, no clinical dementia benefit. The sum of money that's been spent on drug research to date is $60 billion. We analyzed the total spend by British government, the Medical Research Council, this, that, and whatever, on prevention research. And by the way, giving a drug that lowers blood pressure, because blood pressure is a risk factor, would even be considered prevention research. So not just nutrition. And the total spend since 1998 was less than £150,000.
Really? That is incredible, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, I know. And we set up a charity, foodforthebrain.org, because I asked David Smith, if your results are successful, and this was back in 2010 when the first trial was running, what's going to happen? And he said, well, I hope within 5 years it will be standard NHS policy. And I said, well, I'm a bit skeptical. If it took 10 years, we have 2 million people in Britain who've got Alzheimer's who didn't need to. So I said, what would that policy be? And he said, because Alzheimer's takes 20, 30 years to develop, he said, you have to screen everyone over 50 on a proper cognitive function test. So there are 4 functions that break down and you can pick up on them early. If not good, measure the blood homocysteine level. If above the magic number of 10 micromole per liter, then supplement the B vitamins, which will cost you, I don't know, 6p a day. Now, we then set up through foodforthebrain.org the first ever free online validated cognitive function test. Over 300,000 people have done this test, and I would urge anyone over 50, go to foodforthebrain.org, take the test. It will also ask you a few questions about your diet and your lifestyle, so you'll get a free report saying what changes are likely to make the biggest difference. You'll get an accurate assessment of your cognitive function. Most people who are worried because their parents got it are absolutely fine. There's a small percentage who aren't. You get a letter to take to your doctor, giving the doctor all the necessary science to measure your homocysteine level and give you the B vitamins. So we are doing what the NHS could do. It would cost them nothing. I mean, all the GP would have to do is email everyone over 50. And then we would really drive down dementia, because Alzheimer's, only 1 in 100 cases is caused by genes. You know, this is not genetic. This is a totally preventable disease.
No, I totally agree. And I do remember when I think we were both speaking at a conference in 2006 that you were talking about homocysteine. Mm-hmm. But also at that same conference, there was arguments over how do you clinically recognize Alzheimer's. So yeah, it's such a new dimension, which I'm glad to hear that you have got these various parameters to work to, because I think most people out there don't realize this, that there are ways. So Patrick, I know you've repeated it a few times, but could you say for the listeners, where would they go to if they want to have this assessment?
You just go to the website of foodforthebrain.org, foodforthebrain.org. And by the way, just clarify this, when you're losing your memory, you first get diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment. Then if it's worse, with dementia. 2/3 of dementia is Alzheimer's, but you can only diagnose Alzheimer's with a very specific kind of brain scan, which was actually developed by Professor David Smith's group at Oxford University and is now recognized and used worldwide. So this fellow, who in effect has found a cure for Alzheimer's disease, which cannot be reversed, so it has to be prevented, Emeritus Professor of Pharmacology, one of the world's leading experts in Alzheimer's, cannot get funding to do more research. I mean, this is how totally crazy it is. And also, part of the driver for this inability to absorb B12 are the drugs that people are being prescribed. Metformin, the most commonly prescribed diabetic drug, interferes with the absorption of B12. Diuretics, prescribed for blood pressure, again, they eliminate B12. But the worst of all are these proton pump inhibitor drugs, PPIs. They usually end in azole, like omeprazole, for example, now advertised on television as Nexium. And what this drug does is it stops you producing stomach acid, and consequently, you can't absorb B12. And the wonderful irony and the stupidity for profit is very well illustrated by these drugs, because what happens is we make stomach acid for three reasons. One is it sanitizes our food. Two, it digests protein, breaks it down into amino acids. And three, when the stomach acid level goes high, it shuts off the valves at the top and the bottom of the stomach. Now, when a person is not making enough stomach acid, three things happen. One, they don't sanitize their food, so they end up with the wrong bacteria in their gut. We call it dysbiosis. Two, they don't fully digest their food, so now the bugs get to digest it. They produce gas. You've got to get rid of it. It's high up, so you want to belch. And number three, without the stomach acid, you don't shut the valve at the top. So now as you belch, some of the acid in your stomach goes into the esophagus. You get heartburn. Go to the doctor. What do? They give you something that stops you making any stomach acid. Now your digestion gets worse. You can't absorb B12. And we know lack of B12 absorption is a major driver for Alzheimer's. And but, of course, the heartburn stops because you've got no stomach acid. What we do as nutritionists is that we actually give people betaine hydrochloride, which is stomach acid. Their belching goes away. Their indigestion goes away. Their bloating goes away. So you can see how this mechanism has been used to make money, but it's actually driving people into diseases like Alzheimer's. I mean, it's a total scandal. It's complete stupidity. But it's not stupidity because a lot of this is designed, and it's because the motive is profit, you know, not health.
I'm afraid, I think from certainly listening to a lot of the integrated doctors in the USA, I think you're only verifying what I think is general knowledge, but I'm not sure that it's dissipated enough to the public. From the point of view that I think this is one of the main advantages of the internet, from the point of view that information can be transmitted in a much freer way. But would you agree that there's still what I'll call very clever forces out there which can, what should we say, confuse people via magazines, via articles, by even things like setting up sort of, what should we say, organizations which can, what should we say, denigrate people who are trying to say the right thing, that it's very difficult for public to actually become what I'll call self-reliant on their own health. And most people will tend to say, look, you know, I'll go to the doctor and say exactly, and you know, if the doctor tells me to take a drug, then they are fully compliant with it.
Well, and it also goes deeply into our whole legal system, you know, and that's terribly important. I mean, luckily, the public do. I mean, I've written 38 books now, you know, Say No to Cancer, Say No to Diabetes, there's one on Alzheimer's and so on. And we get about 1 million people coming to the website, patrickholford.com, and reading my Facebook and blogs and so on. So there is information out there. But against this, I mean, for example, at the moment we're fighting a little battle in Ireland because the authorities don't want me to say on my products, optimum living made easy. Right? Yeah. Their claim is that by saying optimum living made easy, it's implying in relation to supplements that you can't get all the nutrients you need from a well-balanced diet. Now, I remember a few years ago, getting, I got reported to the Advertising Standards Authority and had my knuckles wrapped because I said you cannot get all the nutrients you need from a well-balanced diet. Example, B12 if you're elderly, vitamin D in the winter, we just don't make enough. And but they have a rule which says you can't ever imply that you can't get all the nutrients you need from a well-balanced diet. And so anyway, I got ticked off. But, you know, a few years later, the government announced that you actually can't get all the vitamin D you need in the winter and everyone should supplement. It's really quite ridiculous. So we've got, you know, we've got a long way to go, but the public have got to get smart. And, you know, I mean, I've had so many attacks over the years. I've been sued. I've been burgled. I've been followed. I've been photographed. You know, I've had, you know, I've become like a flatworm. You know, you chop my head off and it sort of grows back. But at this point, I think it's time to just tell the truth. And, you know, when I get very frustrated about things, I write a song. Do you want to hear my song about this?
I'm sure I and the listeners would love to listen to your dulcet tones.
All right. Well, I'm going to do it down the line, but I'll send you a recorded version. So if you want to cut it in, Brian, for better quality, you can do so. It's not actually, it's, well, it is a song, but it's actually a drug rap. It's a drug rap by NWA, a nutritionist with attitude, Dr. Whole Food in the house. Who gives a damn what really changes? The media espouse fashionable opinions, the hypnotized masses homogenized by minions afraid of their bosses. The outspoken despising the power of advertising are banished and vanished down social crevasses to suppress the uprising. I've been there. In the name of the farmer, it's a grand scam. Big farmer man, don't give a damn. The greedy manipulations of so-called science purporting life-saving treatment for man-made diseases are a clever disguise to make share prices rise. They get fined for doctor bribing, data hiding, downsides and deaths and off-label prescribing, nodded off with a sorry. Next time, same old story. Name of the farmer, it's a grand scam. Big farmer man, he don't give a damn. The name of the farmer, it's a grand scam. Big farmer man, he don't give a damn. Blockbusters off patent, nothing in the pipeline. Vaccine's the future from flu to cancer. Vitamin C works, but there's no profit, so it's not cool. Two dozen jabs before school, that's the vampire's gold mine. The brave new world of zero risk, that's the pitch, except there's a twist. Drug-resistant superbugs and a generation of vaccine-damaged kids. In the name of the farmer, it's a grand scam. Big farmer man, he don't give a damn. In the name of the farmer, it's a grand scam. Big farmer man, he don't give a damn. What do you call someone who targets vulnerable teenagers and gets them hooked on addictive tranquilizers? A psychiatrist who doesn't think about the downsides, going crazy when you try to quit, and the suicides. Do you call this medicine when one in three are dying from psychiatry? Can't the doc see the wood from the tree when all the kid needs is some TLC? In the name of the farmer, it's a grand scam. Big farmer man, he don't give a damn. In the name of the farmer, it's a grand scam. Big farmer man, he don't give a damn. Is this medicine when one in eight have been astatinated and drugs for heartburn make your brains and bones shrink? And for diabetes, you're given pills so you can still eat sugar and bread and end up dying from heart disease instead? All this obscene money is not really funny when you see the harm done, the lives lost, written off as a cost to feed Big Pharma man. But who gives a damn? In the name of the farmer, it's a grand scam. Big Pharma man, he don't give a damn. In the name of the farmer, it's a grand scam. Big Pharma man, he don't give a damn. There you go.
Wow, wowee. Well, I think, what should we say? I've not really ever listened to anything of a rap nature, but I think, what should we say? Very, very impressive. So I really thank you very much, Patrick, for that. That is something that I think listeners will be often replaying and replaying. So, I really think that there's a lot of things there which will, make people tingle a bit more.
Well, you know, the truth is every single thing that I say in that rap, a pharmaceutical company has been fined for doing. So it's unsuable because they've already been sued for doing every single one of those things. And by the way, if you do want to spread it around the place, hopefully to embolden people, I think that's important. It's at patrickorford.com/drugwrap. Patrickorford.com/drugwrap. And also, one of the things I've been up to for the last 2 years, Brian, is building. I'm a lover of the Black Mountains in Wales. They're the nearest bit of true wilderness. I mean, literally 2.5 hours from London on a train or a car, and you can walk all day and see no one. It's just glorious. So my son and I we bought a few years ago a 20-acre farm in the Black Mountains. Absolutely stunning area with no noise pollution, light pollution, any of that stuff. We got owls and badgers, and in fact I was there 2 nights ago, and the when you come to the property, some lights come in on to help you, you know, down to the front door, and the lights came on and I thought, who's here? And I looked out the window, it was a hedgehog. Little hedgehog walking across the way. And it's called Forest Barn Mountain Retreat, and I'm going to be running in the middle of September my first 5-day retreat. You arrive on Friday, you leave on Monday. It's a total health transformation. People are going to not only learn, you know, how their body works and why they are the way they are and how to totally recover health. Also, we'll be doing meditations and exercises, for example, that help you switch off stress and sleep like a baby, and we're going to be making all the meals together, so it's really hands-on, and people are going to learn how to make delicious food. Everyone has a coach who can help them, you know, get clear on what their goals are in life and in health and how to achieve them. We'll be going for guided walks and exploring all sorts of aspects. So again, if there's anyone out there who wants to learn, go to patrickorford.com, go to the events section. There are all sorts of courses, workshops, books, and, you know, it's very good. I'm in my sort of 40th year of doing all this. I just turned 60. And, in fact, I just had a telomere test. Do you know about telomeres, Brian?
I do indeed, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's obviously, they're meant to be as long as they can be.
Well, absolutely. And the thing is, what's so totally brilliant, at the end of the chromosome is that spirally thing that contains the information in our genes, our DNA. And we're not like a car. We're always recreating ourselves. And every time we make a new cell, there's a little bit at the end of the chromosome. Think of it like the hard bit at the end of your shoelace. And it gets 1 degree shorter. And that is your telomere length. And basically, when you run out of telomere length, you're going to die. So you can predict roughly how long someone has to live from the length of their telomeres. But what it also means is you can look at, the effects of diet, exercise, and so on. And and what's basically been found is that all of the things I've been encouraging people to do for the last 30 or so years is there proven in telomere length. Higher your vitamin D, longer your telomeres. Higher your omega-3, longer your telomeres. The lower your homocysteine, the higher your B12, longer your telomeres. Nut and seed eaters, longer telomeres. Supplement takers, longer telomeres. Stress shortens telomeres. Exercise lengthens it. Meditators have longer telomeres. I mean, you could arguably just define what 100% health is simply by saying what lengthens and shortens telomeres. So having hit this ripe old age, and I must admit I feel absolutely fantastic, I've got a pair of glasses, but that's about the only discernible change, I decided to have my telomere length measured, and it turns out I've got the average telomere length of a 29-year-old.
Fantastic, yes.
So, I mean, this is real proof that you know, this stuff works. You need good diet. Also, you do need supplements. There are certain nutrients you just cannot get enough from a well-balanced diet, so-called. You need a good positive attitude. You need to exercise. You need to brush your teeth. you know, these are the essentials of life.
Patrick, we could talk for hours, and I'd love to get you back. But I think what you've given myself and the listeners has been absolutely a delightful dissertation on not only what you have been and where, what, but also, and more importantly, the passion that you've still got to go forward. And I really absolutely commend you for your vitality, and hopefully you'll be looking at double that lifespan, so that you're only halfway through, so you've got all those another 60 years to actually create even more benefits for many more people.
Thank you very much. It's great to connect with you again.
Lovely, Patrick.
I can see clearly.